Okay, everyone, welcome to another episode of the After Sunday podcast.
Welcome, everybody.
Welcome. My name is Corey. This is Matthew B. Price, our lead pastor. I'm the worship pastor. And we are so delighted to have our two very good friends, Rob and Sue Ray. Rob and Sue are married as well.
This is true,
yeah, this is true. Yeah, that's right.
Thanks
welcome
for
here,
having
guys.
Us.
We're so glad you're here. Yeah. Okay, we should do the social niceties here. So, Rob, what are you watching right now? What are you watching on Netflix?
Wow, watching on Netflix. I would say I'm a documentary person. I just recently saw the Tiger Woods documentary, Tiger.
Oh, I haven't seen
it. I thought that was absolutely fascinating because it brings together so many different things in culture, celebrity culture, athletics, race, addiction, sexuality, huge wealth.
Yes.
So many aspects of our culture came together in him. And it's so sad, you know, the traffic accident that he recently had. His name is something that's being talked about again. But I thought that was a very interesting documentary because it was a launching point for so many other discussions that are relevant to our society.
Is this one of those documentaries that, like, he approves of? Like, he's on it? Or it's, about him?
No, it's about him.
He's not interviewed.
It follows his – a lot of it is about his relationship with his father. And fatherhood, that's another big theme is fatherhood. And his early career, because he was this prodigy, and then moving on to amateur golfer, professional golfer, and beyond. So it's fascinating.
Oh, that's cool.
It's very good.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch
that. What about you, Sue? What are you watching or reading?
Well, I sat next to him and watched that. So. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting.
Is it? Yeah. It's wild.
And I listened to Corey's, I listened to your songs.
Oh, to Allstead piano stuff.
Just,
really? Like on Spotify or Apple Music?
Yeah,
or Deezer
very
title.
Good.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
You can
get Oh, yeah, exactly. Totally.
Right. You said you were going to give us $20 for that.
Rob, that was, we actually talked about that as well. We're not, shoot. We'll edit this out. Okay, Matthew, what are you up to these days? What are you watching or reading or looking at?
Okay, so I've been loving this. On Prime, it's this, the world's, toughest race. Have you seen that with Bear Grylls?
No, I've heard about it.
They go to Fiji.
Oh.
It's these teams. So there's probably, I think there's 60 teams of four people. And this season has like, I think 9 or 10 episodes. And basically you go all across Fiji and do circles around the island. Mm. And they're hiking, they're biking, they're climbing, they're swimming. They have to like swim 8 kilometers in this freezing water. They're canoeing from little island to little island. And it takes like almost a week for the winning team to win.
Wow.
And it takes over a week for others. And they're going days without sleep. They're like... And Bear Grylls is just like in a helicopter above all of them, just like watching where they're all at.
Yeah, he's getting older now,
like,
I guess.
It's like teamwork, and they're like supporting each other, and it's actually,
and
I
the
love
beauty
it.
Of
like,
the island too, probably the beauty
oh,
of the island.
Oh, the beauty! Oh, yeah. it's stunning. Yeah. So
is that Bear? Like he's the alpha guy, right? Like Bear, he's
Bear Grylls,
Christian guy. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd recommend it. It's fun.
We should do a North Langley team.
Wouldn't last one day.
You'd be the worst. Exactly. Well, this is embarrassing. Yeah.
What about you, Corey?
Okay, so what are we watching right now? We're on the hunt for a good TV show. I know I feel like we've watched probably way too much Netflix in this season of COVID, but yeah, we watched one that I wouldn't necessarily recommend all the way. It's a good one, but it's got some fast forward scenes in it. But it's
well, we just gave some two very clean examples. So what's our worship pastor going to deliver?
Yeah, there was this this documentary as well. Sherry, you know what? Sherry just started, and she just started watching, and I watched her last night, like a good spouse as well. What's that? It's called is it New Amsterdam? No, it's the hospital show.
The hospital that is show.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of good. I don't know. I just feel like it's like, I don't know. It's okay. It's fine.
Yeah. You've seen one operating room. You've seen them all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right, it's like at this point, sort of a sanitized version of Grey's Anatomy is what it seems like.
Which is a sanitized version of ER.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Which Chicago Hope. Remember? Chicago Hope was so good. Anyways, all the hospital drama. Yeah, shows. Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of what's going on for me.
Okay. Well, let's dive into our topic here.
Let's do it.
We are so grateful, Robbie and Sue, that you're here.
Yeah.
And we are going to hear from Sue specifically in a few minutes. Sue's going to share a story from her life that has to do with our topic. Today, we wanted to chat about Christian character, and in light of the Ravi Zacharias scandal that I don't know if everyone listening to this has heard. I'm sure most people in the Christian community have heard about the revelations about Ravi Zacharias. I just want to take a second to explain them and bring everyone up to speed just in case you weren't aware of what happened. So first of all, just I want to make a note to say that some of the material we're going to talk about is heavy and we'll be dealing with some issues of sexual sin. So just want to make that note in case a listener finds that the topic is too intense to listen to. So, okay, so here's the deal. In the last number of years, we've had some just feels like these amazing Christian leaders, these secrets come out about their private lives for some of them while they've been alive and for a couple of them after they've passed away. So Jean Vanier, some revelations came out about him after he passed away. But Bill Hybels and Carl Lentz, these are two kind of mega church pastors in America, Bill Hybels in Chicago and Carl Lentz in New York, that they had these inappropriate relationships and they've stepped down from their positions. And Ravi Zacharias is kind of feels like the latest on the scene, and it was terrible. Some of the stuff that came out about him, he's a world renowned apologist. He had a huge ministry. If you don't know Ravi, he had a huge ministry called the Ravi Zacharias International Ministry, RZIM, and he died this past May in 2020 at the age of 74. It was shocking to many people grieving his loss. But then now they've had to kind of double grieve, right? Yeah. Like people who really followed him have had to kind of do a double grieve after his death. And, you know, I have a couple of friends who loved Ravi and found him to be instrumental in a certain season of their life, drawing them back to God. And I just want to give just a quick timeline and then I want to chat about it. But so some allegations came out. Christianity Today found some out. Revealed some of the allegations against Ravi after he passed away. And then the RZIM board commissioned a group called Miller & Martin, a law firm that had experience in sex crimes investigations, to conduct an independent investigation. And they did so. And it's a huge report, and it's really hard to read. I actually tried to read part of it, but it is really difficult to read. But the witnesses spoke of sexting, of unwanted touching from Ravi, of spiritual abuse. So he connected these, you know, sexual acts with spiritual abuse. It was, you know, he would like thank God. He'd say, you know, maybe this is we want to thank God for each other in our lives, that this comes from God blessing us, you know, due to our growth in Him or whatever. And even one person said that there was rape involved. So he seems to have become, I don't know the difference between, an affair and becoming a sexual predator. It seems like he's actually more of a sexual predator. And it's just so sad. I mean, it just means he would seek out someone that he could sexually exploit, and used funds from the ministry itself, to kind of have some of these relationships here. So I know this is all really intense, but Christianity Today said even a limited review of Zacharias's old devices revealed contacts of more than 200 massage therapists in the U.S. and Asia, hundreds of images of young women, including some that showed the women naked. Zacharias solicited and received photos until a few months before his death in May 2020.
That's so sad.
So even up to a few months before his death, which makes us all go, did he really repent? So I just want to pause here and just, you know, the three of you, any initial thoughts of your experience when you first heard the news, or kind of initial thoughts about the tragedy here and the victims? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think for me, definitely, it is devastating to hear. I know over the course of my life that these seems like if you just wait long enough, something else will happen. So it is such an unfortunate part of the faith community that it seems like we can't seem to get past this. So it was definitely a devastating thing. I think so sad because there was, with the fact that he was dead, there's no way to at least bring any closure to it for him to be confronted with this. And, you know, I would hope.
For the women.
Yeah, for the women to be able to voice to him what occurred and to provide some sort of closure. So definitely a sad day. And for the witness of the church, because his ministry was to be a witness for those who did not believe but were interested in knowing more and understanding more, that this is such a has such an eroding effect on hopefully their journey on where they're coming to Christ, that this can erode and be such a roadblock to mm-hmm. that. You know, that's Bryn Manning's old phrase, that the things like this make our unbelieving world see the things of Christ as unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it definitely is, given his ministry and for so many reasons, it was a great tragedy.
Absolutely. Had you guys, either of you, met him? Oh, just a brief word on Robbie and Sue. Robbie and Sue have both worked at Trinity. If those of you listening to the podcast don't know them, both attend our church. Robbie's the moderator of our elder board currently. Sue is a life coach, mm-hmm. Counselor. And but you both have held the same position at Trinity. And so, did either of you meet? Yeah, Sue,
yeah, I did. I actually invited him. When I was the chaplain at Trinity, I invited him to speak because I had his niece was a student of ours at Trinity. And so she encouraged me to invite him. And I thought, oh, absolutely. So we did. And there wasn't a lot of interaction. He kind of had an entourage around him.
This would have been about 30 years ago.
Right? Yeah, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the interaction was quite brief. He did his thing, and then he kind of left. So he did ask about our green room, which I had to laugh because we have a bathroom in the gym, and that was our green room. And I'm like, sorry. He came and did his thing and then left.
And you were telling me that it's a little bit different from Tony Campolo.
Yeah, it was different because Tony was, you know, when we had Tony come, he was very, oh, Sue, don't worry. Don't worry even about paying me. I just wanted, you know, I just wanted preach the word, and he was very, very relatable. Yeah. Whereas with Ravi, I felt a bit intimidated, just because, you know, he was this big name person, and he really didn't want, he just didn't have a lot of interaction with anybody. So, but he preached real well, did a great job.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I feel kind of like what you said, Rob. For me, it was like when Carl Lentz, who's the Hillsong? He was Hillsong New York, you know. And honestly, I think, and part of me is a little maybe jaded or skeptical. Like, I think I was like, yeah, sure, of course. Like, you know, it makes total sense. Here's this guy who looks kind of perfect, and he's not that there's anything wrong with dressing well and stuff, but I just remember being like, yeah, I don't know. There's something about the rock star Christian that just seems somehow to make things extra challenging. When you're, and I don't mean rock star, literally. I mean, like, you know, just being kind of at the top of something and powerful and good looking and wealthy. And that's part of that. That's a bit of that culture as well. I think the real kick to the gut for me was Jean Vanier when I found out about him. Cause I revere him. I just think he's such an amazing.
Do you want to say a bit more about him and his role?
Yeah. He's just like, he was the guy who founded, L'Arche in France. And it came, and it's obviously, we had one here in Toronto as well. And Henri Nouwen was, kind of his, like, Jean Vanier was Henri Nouwen's mentor, I think, and kind of the guy who brought him into L'Arche, and just seemed like such a gentle Jesus follower, you know, he was kind of, in some ways, I always felt like he was like almost like the Mother Teresa, like the male version of Mother Teresa, and just a very kind, and he just was such an advocate for the least of these, you know, and especially and L'Arche is a home for the severely mentally handicapped, mentally disabled.
Right.
And so I think just his writing was so profound. Like, he was such it just seemed like such a Christ-like character in so many ways. And then to hear that he had all these kind of inappropriate relationships as well. I don't know I didn't do all the homework of the details of it, but I was just like, oh, like that one feels just like, you know, really... The rest, I feel like for some reason that one really stood out for me. The other ones, it's kind of like, unfortunately, it's kind of like what Rob said a little bit. It's like, yeah, you're just kind of waiting for the next one to fall. I know it's
totally
it's terrible, but
and,
yeah.
And I think for Tanya, a big one was Bill Hybels. She looked up to Bill Hybels.
Yeah,
she just thought of him as such a great leader, and it was just devastating to hear that. And so, okay, so here we are. And Sue, I'd love to hear your story because hear these stories of all of these Christian male leaders. Who seem to have made these decisions that I kind of describe as the Esau choice. You know, some of you know the story of Jacob and Esau, and Esau sells his birthright for like one bit of soup or something like that. And it's like you give up this whole inheritance for instant gratification.
Yeah.
And all these leaders that we look up to. And so you have a story where there was a leader in your life mm-hmm. who made the same choice. And so do you want to just tell us that story and a couple of the lessons that come out of it for you?
Sure. This, again, was over 30 years ago, and I had the privilege and the honor to work in a very large church in California. It was the mega church, and had tremendous staff, very talented pastors, and it was growing exponentially, just, you know, with new people coming to know the Lord, and it was very exciting to be a part of. And the lead pastor, very gifted, very talented, got to a point where he was asked to step down because of an emotional affair. So at that point, there wasn't anything sexual, which was very devastating, because this church, I mean, it had thousands and thousands of people that came to it. And most of them, it was the first seeker-friendly church. I think he almost even coined that phrase. It was, we had people from different seminaries come to interview the pastors. What's going on here? How are you making it grow? And so it was very exciting. And we really felt, all of us on staff felt, that there was God's hand of favor was on the place. And my role, I was the college director, and my my boss was the college pastor. That's kind of the two position titles. And he was a friend before he was my boss. And so I worked with him very, very closely. It was the two of us. And the way we kind of set up our ministry was he had a group of men that he discipled, and then they had all the students underneath them, the volunteer staff we had. And I had a group of volunteer women staff that we would interview and make sure that they were, you know, walking with Jesus. And then we discipled them and trained them to disciple the college students. And so through, I don't know what reason, my college, I'm trying very hard not to say names here, my boss, I'll just say, very integral, very gifted leader, speaker. Students loved him. The ministry was growing. And out of the blue, I had now, I worked there for 6 years, left, came up here. And then out of the blue, his wife, who was my closest friend at the time, called me and just said, my husband's leaving me. And she was pregnant, almost about ready to give birth. And I'm like, what? It didn't make sense. What? And she said, he just said he doesn't love me and he wants to move on. And so he had quit the church. And I said, oh, I think he's having a midlife crisis. Let me give him a call. So I call him and I just, what is going on? You know, and he just said, you know, I've fallen out of love with her and it's just not right. And that's why I left the church. So I know it wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be good. And I'm just drilling in with questions. Is there someone else? Is something going on? Nope. I just feel like this is what we need to do. And so she was about ready to give birth. So she called me to come down and be with her just because she didn't know if he was going to be there or not. So she had her baby, and literally like 3 days later, all the staff got together and we had dinner. We went out for dinner. And so my girlfriend was on one side of me, and another staff member was on the other side of me, and we're all eating. And in the middle of the meal, I looked to my staff girl and just said to her, did so-and-so, did he ever touch you inappropriately? And I immediately put my head down because I don't know why I said that. It was so out of the blue. Like, it felt like, who am I to say that, you know? And I put my head down and she looked at me and she said, why are you asking me? And I looked her straight in the eyes and I go, I think it was the Holy Spirit. And she put her head down now and didn't say anything. And I said, hey, I'm due to leave tomorrow morning. My flight leaves at 6. Do we need to talk? And you have to know that I have mentored her and discipled her for years. Mm. And she said, yeah, let's meet tonight. So my girlfriend, who just had the baby, whose husband had left.
And that husband, I'm not sure if it's clear, is the pastor that she's...
Yeah, the husband's the pastor.
That she respected so much.
Yes,
so.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah, I'm trying not to say names so it makes it confusing. So I met with her that night, and then she just unfolded just a pack of horrible lies and, you know, how they met secretly and while, you know, they're ministering, right? And she was very repentant to me by the end of this whole situation. I'm the one crying. She's holding me and she's apologizing. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. I'm like, this has to stop. You need to come clean and go talk to your husband. And I'm gonna talk to, you know, my boss, and I'm gonna tell him to come clean with his wife. And I was just shaking because I just had him on this pedestal, which was one of my big takeaways from this, that you don't do that, you know. And he, mm-hmm. you know, man or woman in leadership, they are just like everyone else, but they are held accountable. I mean, the Bible talks about that. Those that teach, right, that they will have a greater judgment. It says in James 3:1, I think. And so, so the next day, I called my boss, and he completely denied it and said, "Why would I? What, you would believe her over me? Why would you? You know me. We've been friends. We're best friends, and we've been through so much together, Sue. I would never do something like that." And I kept saying, "Why would she lie? What purpose? What purpose would it be?" And so, through all of that, he ended up calling his wife, my dear, dear friend, and said, "There's going to be some rumors coming out that Sue is going to be saying." And so he started lying about me, saying that it's, you know, it's not true. So then what was very difficult is I had to tell my friend. And I mean, that was the horrible, horrible place to be, to tell her that her husband, for how many years, they had two children, one just recently, that he's been having an affair. And one of the things I couldn't understand that I found out later was the woman that he had an affair with, she kept saying to me, it's like he knew me. Well, of course he did, because he was mentoring her husband. And so he was discipling him. And so he's finding out all this information about her. And so when he would come to her, there was so much deception and manipulation. And it was very, very, very sad. And the part that was so difficult, because it destroyed both their marriages, ended up, you know, falling apart, the children, and just as Robbie mentioned earlier, the students that we had worked with to gain their trust and to talk through about the greatness and the goodness of Jesus, they wanted to throw away all of Christianity and all of Jesus because of this one situation, this one man. And to be able to try to encourage them, don't make that association, you know, totally. This isn't Jesus doing this, yeah. You know, it is this individual. And our church, that was so devastating for our church, because this was the third one within a very short amount of time. Our lead pastor had, as I mentioned, had stepped down. The second one that they put in was the adult pastor. And as he went into that position and took over, he was actually in the midst of an affair. And again, no one knew, no one even thought to ask the questions of their morality, because everyone respected him. And so there was nothing set up, the church, there was nothing really set up to hold these men accountable. And I know sometimes that word can sound negative, accountability, but to me, I just see it as a gift to be able to walk in truth and freedom. When you have other people in your life that you trust, that you can actually share those deepest, darkest secrets or hurt or confusion, whatever it may be, and you have someone that comes along with you and always turns your face to Jesus and always talks about the redemption and the goodness and the forgiveness of God, that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And so it was not set up in our church at all to hold any of us accountable or support, you know, support. So it was very, very, it was devastating to me. And I literally fell flat on my face, because my first thought was, you know, behind deep sadness was, I'm next. I could be next. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to be able to realize that no one is above this. And so to really guard myself, you know, against being in leadership, being in the ministry, and having people look to you, it's a position of power, and you want to hold that very open-handed and carefully and with respect, right, to those that you lead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
first of all, thank you for sharing that story. Sure. That's an intense story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here are these two couples, and you're kind of in the center yeah. of this whole drama. And the story, you told me that story a couple days ago, and, mm-hmm. and hearing it again now, just going, wow, like, you know, when your boss is having an affair with someone on his staff team,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And yet mentoring her husband.
Yeah. It was.
But here you are, you're on the team with them. You know, mm-hmm. it had been a few years, but you were mm-hmm. still on a team with them. You mm-hmm. had mentored this young girl,
yeah.
right? But you were best friends with, or one of your close friends was your boss's wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so here you are, you're in the center of yeah. a storm, really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Sue, like, what are a couple things that come out of this for you, like, as you think about lessons learned or the things God did in you? Like, what would you say to those listening to the podcast, like, as you found yourself in the center of this storm?
Yeah. Good question. One thing is just the importance of having a support system set up beforehand. And there's a great book out there called Connecting by Paul Stanley and Bobby Clinton. And they talk about having a constellation model. If you're in leadership, they said that power, sex, and money are the three biggies that cause people to fall or can cause people to fall. And to have people that you mentor, that you're giving to and you're loving and you're teaching or discipling, and you also have someone above you that is building into you. And then you have these co-mentors or co-people on horizontally that that you can talk freely with, and just to surround yourself with this constellation. And when Robbie and I were dating, actually, I had truly the fear of God put in me from that situation. So, and I got this idea from John Maxwell of, I asked somebody who I really respected spiritually and who knew scripture to hold me accountable. And so I got a 3x5 card and wrote 5 questions out. And every week met with her and gave her permission to ask me these questions just to make sure that I was, you know, walking in truth. And the questions were, first one was, am I connecting with Jesus? Not am I having a quiet time, but because I could just do that without connecting. I wanted to make sure, am I really connecting with the God of the universe? Secondly, am I misusing my power? Mm-hmm. Because I was in a position of power. I was in a position where people were looking to me for guidance and leadership. And so I did not want to misuse that at all. How was my thought life? You know, where was my thoughts this week? And because I know that as my thoughts go, my emotions go and my behavior goes. And so I just wanted to make sure that those were above reproach. And then my last one was, you know, was I lying on any of the previous questions just so I'd be right. caught
on? That's a good likewise. Final question.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, and just not to put leaders, you know, up on a pedestal. They're real people, and don't be afraid to, you know,
yeah.
ask them the hard questions.
Mm. Absolutely. That's so helpful, Sue. And I think one of the things that we want to do is we want to move, kind of take your story, and let's move into I have a couple big things I want to talk about based on the Rabbi Zacharias story, based on your own mm-hmm. experience. So I would love the three of you just to kind of share some of your thoughts or insights here, because I love that constellation model, Sue, that mm-hmm. you're talking about, and that'll come up, and even putting people on a pedestal, that'll mm-hmm. come up again. Mm-hmm. So let's dive into some discussion on this. So I want to begin by talking about the culture of our evangelical churches. So what are the cultures that we, because you, Sue, you're saying the culture of this church, they had two affairs, or one was an emotional affair, one was an actual affair happening. And the culture of the church, they hadn't set up the kind of culture that would allow for honesty or to be able to spot this kind of thing or mm-hmm. whatever. And so let's talk about this. And the first kind of sub point when we think about the culture of our churches, and we can be thinking about North Langley. I mean, the big thing about this podcast is we want it to make sense for our reality. This is not just, you know, the people that listen to this podcast are people that mostly come to our church. And mm-hmm. so we just want to think about North Langley and how we can grow in this area. But you talked about people on a pedestal. And I want to talk about that. I want to talk about like the hero culture of evangelicalism. Mm. So Bill Hybels, Ravi Zacharias, Carl Lentz, they were kind of heroes in the evangelical world. And I'm sure that your boss, Sue, was a hero in his own
absolutely.
World.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I think Ravi, I mean, he named the ministry after himself. So that might be one one thing not to do. But
Matthew Price.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh,
that's right.
But hero culture, I mean, are we making it impossible for leaders? This is my question. I'd love to hear your thoughts. I mean, I think of in the secular world, people like Britney Spears, Miley Cyrus, Michael Jackson. These are people that couldn't handle the pop culture world. I mean, the intensity of fame or whatever right. just broke them in many ways. But I was thinking about the church. Is some of this our own fault for kind of creating this hero pedestal culture? Thoughts from you guys?
I totally think so. Not that I think that. I don't mean that it's like, it's funny. It's maybe I would frame it differently. It's not like it's our, maybe it is our fault, but it, and I think it's, I would say it's probably largely innocent. But I do feel like what has happened, or it seems like, it just seems like there's often like a, and I don't want to go on tangents because I feel like there's a lot of little rabbit trails to all this, but like I think the pedestal thing that you talked about, Sue, is so, like I know personally I've always been so, I actually am quite scared of pedestals. Like I just don't ever, partly mm-hmm. And mostly just because I know myself well enough. Not that I'm necessarily in danger of being put on a pedestal, but you can, right? If you're in a public sort of position,
sure. mm-hmm.
people think, oh, well, you're the worship pastor, so like you must have, like your marriage must be perfect and your kids right. must be perfect and... And then it becomes like the pedestal that you're standing on becomes smaller and smaller and smaller the higher it goes. And you're like, I can't, like this, none of this is true, actually. Like my marriage is actually really struggling. I'm, you know, not that my marriage is not currently struggling, but it has struggled, of
yeah,
course.
Sure.
We've had lots of peaks and valleys. And I think I do wonder sometimes, and this, we don't necessarily need to talk about this, but I have felt like in the evangelical world, like the, and I know we're going to talk about sort of purity culture later maybe, but this idea of being sort of like a sterilized or a sanitized kind of picture of what it means to be human, I have sometimes felt that is quite stifling because I feel like it kind of feeds itself a little bit where you're like, okay, so it's like this, you're supposed to be smiling and happy and have the joy of the Lord. So you should always, you know, like there's lots of like, be positive. Don't be, you don't want to be too, like if you're negative, it doesn't seem very Christian. It doesn't, mm-hmm. you know. And I get that it's funny because like on either extreme, it's like, well, yeah, like if you're constantly negative and mean and sour, it's like, well, maybe you need the Lord, you know, but mm-hmm. at the same time, it's like there's somewhere in between when you're like, well, no, you can't, like, you know, you have to, we always have to look a certain way and we should have a little bing, you know, in your teeth when you smile. And that can be, I think that actually feeds a super unhealthy culture because you're like, well, and I don't really know what the answer is to that, actually. I don't know what the answer, because it's like, well, you know, the obvious extremes are both not great to be like, you know, someone who, I remember at a church that I was at, someone got up on stage and we really prided ourselves, this is back in Winnipeg, on being very authentic and very, we just want to be really honest. And so we were really good at empathy. And so sometimes people are like, well, it's not very hopeful. You're really good at empathy, but you're just kind of, yeah, life sucks. Like, let's just keep, you know. And mm-hmm. But I remember this one guy got up and he basically was kind of like, it was funny because in the name of authenticity was basically saying like, you know, I don't even really know if I believe anymore. And he's like the worship leader, you know, and he's kind of like putting out his dirty laundry for everyone to see. And it was like, well, that wasn't really helpful for anyone, actually. Mm-hmm. Maybe for him it was therapeutic, I don't know. But so that's the other side of it where it's like, well, you can't go all the way that way. But anyway, sorry, I'll stop there. But I feel like sometimes we're guilty of kind of saying this is what it looks like to be a good Christian. And I think that can actually feed something really unhealthy.
Corey, I appreciate this because actually I was thinking of power. Hmm. Like I was thinking more of like Christians in powerful places or how much power did they give Ravi Zacharias or how much power did Bill Hybels have? You're kind of bringing up a different hero culture piece where you're saying we expect them all to be perfect.
That's well, and I think that it leads to power, though, because the people that right. are shiny and happy and they're doing what they're supposed to do, I think that it's like, oh, that person's so smart and so well-spoken and so
right.
healthy. And so it's like, we got to get him. You know, he's like, oh, look at how well he speaks. We should
right.
put him up.
He
but
has
yeah,
no blemishes. Or he's,
no blemishes.
He's
like
perfect.
He'd be a perfect leader. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
anyway, yeah. So. Any thoughts on that?
I think there – yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Corey. And what was – Matthew, when you sort of launched this this thought about how this reflects on be it evangelicalism or just the church. I don't know if evangelicalism has gotten a lot of distortion these days, but that what is traditionally seen as that, I think it the thing is there can be a codependent relationship with the organization and this, because they need this person to bring in the money to, you know, if the organization is built on them, then all of a sudden, I don't just want you to succeed for all of our goals and objectives. Like, I need you to not do this because my job is dependent on it, or empire. So the, it's I was just talking with a friend yesterday about this point, that there can be a an engine that's built around a gifting and anointing and all the great things that all of a sudden now have concurrent agendas that people need this to happen for different reasons. So I think that can that is where it becomes dangerous, because now you're not just about the lofty goals and mission and all those things. Now you're needing this person to develop a great sermon, and this person starts to feel the weight of that. Okay, you got to crush this again. You know, you're as good as your last sermon, which I think pastors, that is a tyrannical, you know, expectation laid upon them, that, you know, we're expanding. We've got to we're just going to market you as hard and far as long as we can to see how far this mission goes. And that can put an enormous amount of weight, because you hear people who have been, who found themselves, either they have a moral failure of some stripe, be it with finances or sexuality or whatever, that there was a weight that they could not escape, that they just felt they were trapped by. So that's where escapism starts to come in, and they begin to make a very foolish decision that in the light of day would be like, it's ridiculous. But in the moment of that weight and that expectation, you just look for some way out, and you just would make a very
awful look for
decision.
A release.
You look for a release. And so I think that is one of the things that our organization and me on the board at North Langley, that how do we do this with our leaders, where Matthew feels his gifts and everything moving forward, but he doesn't feel like, you know, it's the Matthew Price show, that it's that he is the reason for everything. God uses him, and he's the great thing I love about Matthew. He's the first to say, do not, excuse me, think that this is me. This is the Lord using us together. I have my little role, but everybody's got their role that makes it the great thing. And I think as we do that as a church, that provides a bit of safety too, that he sees too. It doesn't all rest on him. He, you know, he's faithful, and that's all we ask of him to do, is to be faithful, and we respond accordingly. So I think that that's how organizations have to be careful, that they don't put all their eggs in one basket.
And be responsible. Be responsible with that. That's what's every organization should set something up. Like our the church I came from, there was nothing. There was no accountability or support, and it showed at the end. You know, just to be able, and it doesn't have to be, you know, I believe it looked different in different organizations, right? What works for you. But something where, as the staff and the people that you minister to know that there's something set up, that you can have confidence that it's not Matthew's church. This is North Langley Community Church. This is God's church.
And there, and there are there are uniquenesses, but there are similarities. Because ultimately, this is about spiritual formation, being formed to the person of Christ. So there are very millennial old principles that are no different than they were ever. So making sure that we stay connected to those transcendent truths and contours of the human soul that have always been true with humanity. I mean, our soul, we all have these same tendencies, how to deal with this different context and different unique moment. But for all the uniquenesses, it's the same thing too.
Well, I want to I want to move into importance of boards and accountability in a deeper way in just a second. But just to stay on that pedestal hero culture thing for a second, I was really interested in Jesus' words in Matthew 23. He says, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, so you must be careful to do everything they tell you, but do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy, cumbersome loads and put them on other people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. I thought this was really insightful, because I think people who have put Carl Lentz, Bill Hybels, Rabbi Zacharias, Jean Benyet, whoever, your boss, Sue, on a pedestal and go, well, did everything I learned from them, was it wrong? Was it the worst? Do we have to go book burning here? Canceling things and stuff. And I think there's something interesting. And I don't know. I want you guys to push back on this if you disagree. But Jesus is warning that leaders who that there are leaders who sit in Moses' seat, and so that's saying that they are officially there to teach the law, right? They're speaking the truth of the law, the Torah in Israel. So we can respect that. But spiritual authority, I think Jesus is saying, can be a cover for evil. These people can actually be whitewashed tombs. Mm-hmm. Now, the things they're saying are actually true, mm-hmm. but they're wolves in sheep's clothing. And it's like, well, we don't see the wolf. That's because they're in sheep's clothing, right? That's mm-hmm. the whole point, right? Like these are, but the words they're saying are actually true. So do you guys want to lean into that a little bit? Like somebody who's second guessing, sorry, another one is Karl Barth. Some of us have found out Karl Barth had a long time mistress or whatever. And it's like, well, he's one of the greatest theologians of the 20th century. So do we just throw out his commentary on Romans? Like, is it just kind of like, well, these, you know, what do you guys say to this idea that do we fully cancel them, their teachings? You know, Jesus seems to say you can hear the truth. They can have a positional authority and what they said is true, yet don't do what they do. Clearly, these are whitewashed tombs. Thoughts on that?
We still read the Psalms, and that's, you know, David. You think, you know, like, I think we've talked about this for sure. I think that we have to, it's like with the artist too, right? I always feel like we've talked about this on our podcast before, but like, you know, judge the art, not the artist. Or like, you know, so, I mean, not that you can judge the artist too, but as far as, you know, would you buy, how about Michael Jackson's music, right? It's like, well, Michael Jackson was a musical genius. You know, his music was incredible. And it doesn't mean that because he was obviously a mess, you know, like it's that his music is less somehow valuable in terms of the beauty of it and the God-given talent of all that stuff. So I feel like we have to take the good with, you know, with what's being created. Kind of like, actually, yeah, it's interesting. I never thought of that passage before, but that's an interesting, yeah, for sure. There's truth being spoken or but it doesn't mean that it doesn't. Maybe you kind of separate those two things and say, let's just be reminded, this doesn't mean that this person is perfect because mm-hmm. they're saying things that are true.
Yeah, yeah, I think of Philippians chapter 1 that I think, I don't have it right in front of me, but this idea that for some, Christ was preached out of in greed and those sorts of things. And Paul says, but in the end, Christ was preached. Mm. So that is a worthwhile thing. I think that passage, when I was a young child, the pastor of the church I attended in this little bitty Texas town ran off with the church secretary. And this same sort of thing, I was like, what? You know, it was the first time I had a real ground zero experience with something like this. And that passage was something that my parents kind of helped me. It gave me a little bit of direction that this didn't undermine everything they had said. Because this happens, I mean, it happens in the broader culture. I am a fan of classical music, and this is one of the discussions with Wagner, because he was famously anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. So does this mean that we should
not
discredit
listen to everything,
anything that Wagner mm-hmm. has ever written? Or do you just understand this is a very dark side of him, and it influenced some of his work was fed and fueled, and at least ideologically, by this? So what mm-hmm. does that mean? And I think it is complicated. But I think to the point about spiritual truth, I think it doesn't say that everything he would have said then is of no value and everything was a lie. That is not true. But definitely there are things we have to review and revisit.
And I think you really, like with the Pharisees, you look at the fruit, right? You look at what they can say one thing, but what are they doing? That's kind of what that passage is saying. And I know that in 2 Timothy 3, when Paul's warning Timothy about the end days, and he's telling all these things are going to happen in the end days, and I love this verse. It says, they will act religious, but they will reject the power that could make them godly. And they actually exhort Timothy, stay away from people like that, you know. And so we need to see what is the fruit. And that's what was so deceiving and difficult, because I'm looking at these pastors that the ministry is growing. It is being great.
Totally.
And yet the secret sins were going on. And so we need to really pray for discernment, and we need to pray for our leaders. So pray for our leaders, pray for protection, pray that they're integral, pray that they walk in truth, you know, and none of us are immune, right?
No. So if none of us are immune, let's then transition to the importance of institutional accountability and maybe the role of a board. So let's think about North Langley. So we have a board. It's funny, like It's not funny. It's nerve-wracking.
We're not funny. What do you mean? There's nothing funny about the board at all.
No, it's any time we're having this conversation, I think I can get quite warm because mm-hmm. I think about all these people who have fallen are kind of in the role that I'm in. And I think like it just makes me panicky slightly. Like I'm like, oh man, like this, like, am I seeing things correctly? The other day I asked my, counselor, I was like, am I a narcissist? I said that. I was like, am I a narcissist?
He's like, absolutely.
He's like, Matthew, narcissists don't ask that question. And so I'm like, okay, good. So you're saying I'm not a narcissist. No, but I am wondering, I'm like, am I like one of those horses that has those blinders on? Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to live with such, but I think we all have them.
Sure.
But I'm like, what gets a Ravi to that place or a Bill Hybels to that place? And I did want to just reassure people, and I just want to just kind of commend Robbie. Robbie's our moderator. Robbie always asks me about my life. Like when we meet one-on-one, and Robbie's always asking about my life. And so I think like North Langley, just to encourage, I think we have risk management committee. We've got a personnel committee. We've got structures, but I did want to just say, maybe to put people at ease, like it has been wonderful to have the relationship Robbie and I do. But I did realize I can also lie to Robbie. Yeah. Right, like I don't have to be truthful, mm-hmm. you know. I promise I am being truthful but in our meetings. But I mean, like it is something where like, what happens if a leader, if I were, you know, and you know, we can maybe go 40,000 foot and not specifically talk about North Langley, or we can talk about North Langley. But I did just think like, what happens when a leader begins to lie or lie to themselves, and it slowly grows, and they're not answering questions truthfully? You know, how does a board keep a church accountable? One thing before you guys lean in on some thoughts, I did want to say Dr. Diane Langberg, she's a counselor who works with victims of sexual abuse in churches. Mm-hmm. She gave this stat. This is crazy. She said the statistic she used, she said 3-5% of sexual abuse accusations are false. 3-5%. So we have a 95-97% chance that the person who's reported a sexual abuse in the church is telling the truth. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
A 95-97% chance. So somebody makes an allegation. She said, yeah, there's a chance they're lying. There's a chance. It's a 3-5% chance. Right. But you should probably take it seriously. 95-97% Absolutely. Chance that this, they are risking much mm-hmm. by coming out and making this. And so what do we do, friends? Like, how do we make sure North Langley is a safe place as we think of things like this?
I think just to some of what Sue had mentioned earlier with this, the book on the that talked about connecting and the constellation approach. I think this is where you need to have a group of people around everyone, because you can lie to one person. If you just got, you kind of single somebody out and you feed them. But I believe the best chance in lies, you know, some people are remarkable at maintaining and fostering a deceptive persona in life. But I think as you have a collection of people around you that are both, to use the metaphor that of this constellation, that some are inside your organization, so like Matthew to Corey and his lead team, as well as people outside that are not in that, I think between a variety of these, that together can provide the best chance of truth to be seen. And I think that a great virtue is for people, everyone, to know that the truth is going to save you. If you start to believe that the lie really does is in the best interest in some way, you get your head around into that space where actually the lie is in the best interest of the organization, the people around me, whatever it may be. That's a very, very dangerous place to be. So I think always coming back to how the truth is what we all desperately need and depend on. Mm. So I think that's some of it, because I know as I counsel people a lot with issues related to sexuality and addiction. And I'm not a psychotherapist, but around particular pornography. And that, if you can get over that impulse to hide, you know, this so Genesis 3, this idea of we sin and we just want to cover and you do not see me. There is such power in being able to, in the right place, in the right moment, disclose all of those things that to the right people. We were just listening yesterday to a podcast. It was on organizational psychology, but it was they were interviewing Brené Brown. I had to get Brené Brown's name dropped at some point.
It's a lot of people.
Thanks. So, and they were talking about this. At what point do leaders because some leaders can share publicly in a way that it's almost like a confession, but it's not really. You know, hey, I'm there with you. I know what you mean. So they have kind of done a faux confession, but it did not really get to the heart of what the issues are. Yeah. So, and how vulnerability, and of course, if Brené, you're going to use the word vulnerability, and being open and transparent, not with everybody, but with the right people and in the right place. So yeah,
I was saying that's, we were, Robbie and I were talking about this, of being, she termed it, you need to be vulnerable with boundaries. And I want to reframe that. We need to be vulnerable in wisdom. And so who we share with, when we share with, how much we share with, to be wise in that. And the issue is not.
But that we share.
But that we share. Yes. But yeah, so it's important to be authentic, to be genuine, to be transparent. Vulnerable, but to do it and to be wise in it, especially with who, I feel like
I totally agree. I think the big challenge for the church is that, and I remember someone saying this years ago, and we were just saying like, man, it'd be so great if we were like the kind of place where people could just be like confessing their sins to each other and just really, you know. And I remember, again, this is sort of, I feel like I always have like just a slight bit of cynicism in me, and I'm always like, yeah, but sure. And you'll get some people that are wired that way, that can be fully honest and full. And they're just like, and I have friends that are like that. They'll just be like, oh man, here it is. And just lay it out. I'm like, man, you're good at that. Like I can't, you know, I've never been good at that. I'm always like, hold the cards kind of close, deal with the stuff quietly, you know, and I've grown in that. And I have a few very key people in my life that I can be really honest with, but the key thing, so what I'm trying to say is that it's like, man, you need a place that is saturated in grace, an environment to be able to be like that, to be able to be vulnerable and honest and authentic and actually say, hey, this is what's going on for me right now. Like, I'm really struggling in this area. Or for me personally, it's always been actually really important to have friends outside of this ministry, like to have people that I can talk to that are, and not that I've, I haven't had a massive history of these huge, huge secrets, but definitely things that are going on in my life and things that I'm struggling with or temptations that I'm feeling like where I have a few key friends that are not part of this organization. So I don't feel like, you know, there's dynamics that go with that. You're the worship pastor and you're, and I've been, even in life groups, it's been like that a little bit too, right? Where you're part of a life group and it's just, and whether it's Corey's making this up in his head or whether it's the real thing, you sometimes just like, yeah, there's somehow the table just seems to lean a little more towards me and expectations that, you know, and so it's, that's been a key thing is to have, for me at least, personally. And I think that's actually a great encouragement for our staff. I don't think we have necessarily formally said this, but I know it's encouraged us to say, you should see, like, you know, are you seeing a counselor? Are you seeing, like, is there someone that you're kind of able to really talk stuff out with? Just because I think the stark reality is while there'll be some people who will be blatantly honest and very transparent, I guarantee you there are many that will not be. Mm-hmm. And they need to know that it's like, hey, you're encouraged to go. Like you should go and you got benefits that cover counseling. Go and see a counselor. Make sure that you are getting this stuff out, you know, and talking it through. I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. It gives you a different perspective, right? If everyone's in the same organization, they tend to have one way of looking at things, right? So if you have someone who's totally outside, they could see things perhaps you've never seen, you know?
Totally. That's right. Yeah, where it's just Matthew's just Matthew. He's not Pastor Matthew. It's like, it's just my buddy Matthew, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, right, I forgot you're a pastor to church. You know, like having someone like that where it's like, oh, okay,
yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
And all this is the importance of what we're talking about is walking in the light, right? 1 John chapter 1, God is light, and in him there's no darkness at all. If we say we have fellowship with him while we're walking in the darkness, we lie and do not do what is true. But if we walk in the light as he himself is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, cleanses us from all sin. Mm-hmm. I love that. I want us to be a place that walks in the light. And I think in my own life, when I think about walking in the light, a sign that something might be wrong and that I'm walking in the darkness is when I feel uncomfortable talking about it, quote unquote. Like, mm-hmm. let's say I sit down and either with someone like yourself, Robbie, mm-hmm. or like with my wife, Tanya, and I just know that there's something there, like, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I think, why am I hiding this? Like this, you know, I keep saying it's for their good or for whatever, but I'm like, it's not good. It's not, you know, or it's been a while since someone has said no to us. John Stackhouse writes about this. He says, you should think about your life. When was the last time someone said no to you? Like, yeah. or said, That's you good. Can't do that or something like that. Mm. Like, when was the last time someone gave you a harsh word in love? You know,
that's good.
If you can't think of the last time, you probably don't have the kind of robust community around you that you need. Mm. That's and I good. Thought that Stackhouse, you know, argument was really good. Mm-hmm. I like that. Hey, I'd like to transition us to our final kind of section here, because what I want to do is I want to ask you guys about the Billy Graham rule. And the Billy Graham rule, in 1948, Billy Graham began a series of these evangelistic meetings in Modesto, California, and he gathered his ministry team to chat about these challenges that traveling ministers faced at the time. And Billy and his team wrote four values or rules that they would keep as a team. And he wrote about these in his book, Just As I Am. So I want to read you his second rule, or the second value they had. One was around finances, the other was how they work with churches, blah, blah, blah. But they had one on sexual immorality. And I want to read this. These are Billy Graham's words written in his book. He writes this, quote, "The second item on the list was the danger of sexual immorality. We all knew of evangelists who had fallen into immorality while separated from their families by travel. We pledged among ourselves to avoid any situation that would have even the appearance of compromise or suspicion. From that day on, I did not travel, meet, or eat alone with a woman other than my wife. We determined that the Apostle Paul's mandate to the young pastor, Timothy, would be ours as well. Flee youthful lusts." 2 Timothy 1. End of quote. So here Billy Graham is saying, my team, we as men are never going to travel, meet, or eat alone with a woman other than our wives. Now, at face value, this is really good. And from what we know, Billy doesn't seem to have ever had a moral failure, which mm-hmm. you think, like, who's like the biggest evangelical name ever? It's Billy. And so you think, this is a win. There's a famous speaker named Vodi Bakum. And he's a pastor in the United States. And I remember my mom was going to go pick him up for a Christian conference. And he said, well, who's picking me up? And they said, Susie Price. And then he said, nope. So then I went to pick him up, right? And I drove him from, and I thought, that was the first time I had ever mm-hmm. heard of this, somebody giving that kind of like, living that kind of rule. So on the face of it, it's really good. But let me go ahead and push back here. And then I want to hear all of your thoughts on this, because there's on Twitter, the author of the book, The Liturgy of Politics, Caitlin Scheiss, wrote this. She said, quote, "I'm just a girl standing in front of evangelicalism, asking it to protect women from abuse without resorting to purity culture rules that make it impossible for us to have careers." End of quote. So here's what she's saying. She never mentions the Billy Graham rule, but she's saying, rules like the Billy Graham rule, or what she's calling purity culture, are where Christian male leaders say, listen, I don't want to be tempted. So like Billy, I'm not going to associate with women very closely, which means I'm probably not going to hire women for the roles that they're for a certain role. If it's up between a woman and a man, I'm probably going to hire the man so that I don't get tempted. And so that I can meet alone with the guy. And so I can travel with the guy and go to conferences with the guy, right? So it's like, males are hiring males. Mm-hmm. So Caitlin's saying, in light of the Ravi Zacharias scandal, lots of leaders in the church are going to go, let's keep practicing the Billy Graham rule. Mm-hmm. And she's saying, okay, but where does this leave women that might work for Billy, but what about all the women that didn't get to lead because Billy didn't want to be around them? So it's an interesting question. So mm-hmm. I want to throw it out to you guys. Any insights, thoughts on the dilemma?
Because it sounds like you're punishing women for that mm-hmm. quote. You're punishing women for simply being women. Mm-hmm, and right. that's not right. That's not fair.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's discrimination.
Yeah, like yeah. we were talking just before here, and I was just saying that I don't think that we, like at North Langley, we wouldn't be, I don't think that we practice it super strictly. Like there'll be times when, you know, a male and a female staff person might meet, go for a walk, you know, as they're like, hey, we have to talk, it's a beautiful day, let's go for a walk and we'll meet about this thing. I liked, Sue, you had said like maybe having like sort of the public, like having it in a public setting that actually helps. Because I feel like, I guess my pushback is I agree with the female, the tweet. Yeah, Caitlin there. Like I just think like, man, like rigid rules are just so often, and I get it, I know we need rules, but when you have rigid rules like that, it almost like it blows things up even bigger sometimes, or it can. And I think that if there's a way to say no, like we're gonna let's be realistic about this, because we don't want to, yeah, it'd be a terrible thing to mm-hmm. to suddenly not hire. It's like, well, she's, you know, she's too attractive, so we shouldn't hire her, or you know, like it's like, for whatever reason, it does seem like a real shame. It seems terrible, the idea of not.
But now, the fruit is Billy Graham seems to have lived a life of purity. So I'm only pushing back to say it seems like it's working.
Right. Yeah, definitely there was no public scandal. I feel like to say he lived a life of purity is probably, if he's a human being who is sinful and broken like the rest of us, he probably didn't live, you know what I mean? Like I'm saying, sure, he didn't have a public scandal, for sure. And there is that. I don't know. Baby in the bathwater. Is that the right term? Baby in the bathwater?
Yeah, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Who's the baby and what's the bathwater?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was trying to...
Is Billy as a baby? In his own bathwater?
He was a cute baby. Billy. Wonderful. Just
there's
didn't
a blues
cry.
Song in there somewhere.
Yeah, there's something. Yeah. I don't know where I was going. Yeah.
Well, I think there certainly needs to be some sort of safeguards. You know, Robbie and I, even just because of our positions, we have... made little, I don't know if you want to call them rules, but we just kind of make sure that I'm not alone with the man. He's not alone with the woman. If I meet mostly with women, at least that's my desire, what I enjoy. But if it is a guy that I meet with out of respect for my husband and out of want to keep away from appearance of evil, I'll meet at a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I even wonder about that, going, now all these people are watching me with another man having coffee, you know,
sure.
But I have my file out, my Bible out, my, you know, pen. So I try to make it look as business as possible, but just to try to put some sort of safeguards in, which is better than having the man come into my office in my home. Right.
So you're saying you would do a version of the Billy Graham rule, but you would just say, if you ever met with a man, it would be in public. So it's mm-hmm. accountable.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Rob and I talked about that.
Yeah. Then we would have told each other. Because I think the Billy Graham rule, I mean, if we were wanting to apply it universally, I don't think it, you know, you were doing this to kind of provoke conversation. I think for him in that place, in that moment, it was what was needed. So mm-hmm. I don't want to say, therefore, illegitimate. If it can't be applied everywhere, it cannot be applied anywhere. I don't think that is true. But I think that there are places and spaces that you just have to be very careful with this. So to know, I wouldn't go to make it too laissez-faire, like, oh, it's good. You know, the one of the things that with Sue, and I know you're not saying that, Corey, and I know that that's not what people would say, but I think the idea, there is a place, there is a spot where we can provide places for men and women to work together. And this is one of the things working at Trinity, which is so much about mentoring young men and women in opportunities, leadership development, that it may be something that costs more, like meaning that you if you go to a conference, you bring a group. You don't just go with two people. You think, oh, it just could be two people. No, you just bring other people along to make sure that it works. With Sue and I, we always, if I took someone to the airport that was a woman, I would always tell Sue who it was. I would tell her and my secretary, I'd say, I'm leaving at this point. When I got to the airport, I said, I'm at the airport. I just dropped her off. I'm now driving back again. So there would be question about where I went and what I did. So I think that there are ways, and the way we configure offices with windows and these sorts of things, I think there are ways to be vigilant and not eliminate this very valid point where a woman would never be hired as an intern or a, you know, a colleague or those sorts of things to be in that role. So I think we definitely have to do the extra work to try to make those opportunities equally available.
No, oh, that's good.
Can I just say too, I think, and this is, again, maybe another conversation, but I sometimes also feel like there is a narrative that doesn't always feel fully truthful to me about guys and girls. I remember this is something that this seems to be a big thing in the church, and I totally understand why it's there. But it's like guys are these ravenous, carnivorous men who are just all constantly thinking of sex and all they can do, and they just can't handle being in a room with a girl because all they're thinking about is sex. And I'm like, man, like that, I'm not saying that, like, we're all sexual beings, but I just, again, I feel like that also can do damage because it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? When it's, maybe that's what I'm pushing back a little bit about, like, is it's just like, for me, we talked about John Eldridge's book, what is it called?
Wild at Heart,
you know, and I remember just, again, I've said this to many people, I read it and I'm like, man, I'm not this guy. Like, I am not this guy. Like, you know, third chapter in, I'm like, nope, I'm done. You know, I'm not beating my chest and howling at the moon and looking for a damsel in distress to, you know, like whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just, so sometimes I feel like there's that as well, like where it's like, I get the super important needs for good, healthy boundaries, obvious things like you say, like windows and even like what you're saying, Rob, I feel like that's what I've kind of, that's kind of what, how my, you know, my career in ministry has gone as well, where it's always like, yeah, hey, I'm going to be doing this. And even now I'll say to whoever's in the office, Debbie or Brett or whoever, say, hey, I'm meeting with this person and, you know, we're just going to take a walk and I'll be back by this time. And just so it's like, it's very out in the open and it's very clear. And and mostly I would say in those moments, it's mostly for the optics of it all. Like it's actually, it's not as though I'm, because I'm worried that I may suddenly, you know, like it's like, no, it's
perception.
Like, I just, if anyone asks, then it's like, no, we knew he was going for a walk and they worked together and he, you know, whatever. So, anyways, I just want to throw that out there.
Well, the words of Paul to Timothy in 1 Timothy 4, watch your life and doctrine closely. I thought that's such a great little phrase there, watch your life and doctrine closely. And I thought the character and truth, you know, life and doctrine, right, that they have to go hand in hand. And it seems like in Christian ministry you can get pretty far ahead with doctrine and truth. Your mind can continue to grow while your character can be kind of left behind. And, and unfortunately, I think we see this in Ravi's life. But I've seen that in my own life too. Like I remember in my own struggle with pornography, I was struggling with pornography and I was doing my master's degree at Regent. So I'm growing in my mind, right? And truth in my mind, but my character was seriously undergoing assault, right? And I was... So I think, like, I've experienced that, and I think, and I think, so that encouragement, watch your life and doctrine, it just, they go hand in hand, and Paul knew that, and he wants Timothy to know that, and I want to just encourage our church, just so you know, this is our next series, it's on repentance, confession, so it's going to come up after Easter, sometime in the spring, we're going to do a several week series on what does it mean to be an apprentice of Jesus as we confess our sin, we practice repentance. And so some of this stuff will come up again in a series, but I think part of it is being the kind of believer that is able and understands how to confess sin so that you're confessing things that are small, that they're just the beginning of something. You're not having to like, it's not gotten to an affair, right? Like you're going, actually, I feel like I'm having a temptation here and I need to confess that in my apprentice group. And so when we practice that, I think we can definitely get ahead of the game. The other thing I wanted to say was this Sunday, we're going to be looking at the story in the book of Luke, of Luke 4, when Jesus is tempted in the wilderness. And he just says no to three temptations.
Yeah, I wanted to add to that. I said one aspect we haven't even discussed, which is a huge discussion, is that there is an enemy of our soul that, you know, Satan came to kill, steal, and destroy. And, you know, Christ came that we have life and have it abundantly. So there is a true spiritual force out there that wants to trip up any Christian, all believers, because he does not want us to bring glory to the Lord. And so we have to pray in that regard as well, that the Lord... You know, we know the Lord is victor, but there is an enemy that wants to trip us up everywhere.
Always. So. And just that's so classic. I'm glad you brought that up. Genesis 3, the way he starts, did God really say that? Yeah. You know, this kind of questioning make to make you, go, I don't know. And if you have someone else in your life to go, no, what are you thinking? Of course that's wrong. Or of course, you know, this is based on greed or power or the fact that you can't repent. You can't. It's exactly, Satan is right in there trying to get all this to work. Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, this has been so good. I think we are a little over an hour, but that's okay. It's been such a great conversation. Mm-hmm. Robbie and Sue, thanks, guys, so much for coming
and being part of this.
For
it's been
us.
So good. Yeah. Matthew, any last words for us?
No last words.
<That's> okay. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We love you, North Langley. God bless you. We will chat again soon.
Absolutely. God bless.
Bye. Bye.